promised everybody that I was going to answer questions from Twitter. I do, however, have some super comments from the live audience, so I will go ahead and answer some of those, which means I get to play this first and foremost.
Stop watching!
Music to my ears. All right, Legend, how do we interview Adelman and Nori? So the way that this works is, especially with assistant coaches, it is complete taboo for an organization to not allow an assistant coach to interview as a head coach candidate with a different organization. It never, ever, 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 ever happens that an organization doesn't allow an assistant coach to go out and interview to be a head coach. That promotion matters. You have a coaches union. And so what the Lakers would do is they would contact the Wolves, or they would contact the Nuggets, and they would ask permission to interview Adelman and Nori. Now, typically when that happens, it's when, you know, if those candidates are in the playoffs, normally you ask for permission there, either when you have a few days between games, or if their team has a few days off between series, that's normally when those interviews take place with other prospective organizations. Now with Adelman and Nori specifically, it looks like that series is going to be long. It looks like the Dallas and OKC series is also going to be long, and there probably isn't going to be much downtime between this series and the next one. So that's going to make things a little complicated for the Lakers to find time to interview Adelman and Nori if they haven't already. We know basically that they haven't already. In the meantime, this is when you would interview JJ Redick. You would interview Kenny Atkinson. You would interview assistant coaches or former head coaches that work for organizations that aren't currently in the playoffs. Again, it doesn't appear that they have done that quite yet, but that is something that they are preparing to do in the coming days. But for those two coaches in particular, and any other coach that is currently active in the playoffs, or any assistant coach anywhere else, you need to ask permission to interview that assistant coach. You're always granted that permission, and you move on from there. All right, that's not the next one. The next one comes from Lakers Sean saying, remember that time Pelinka ditched exit interviews? He's a magician. If only Bob Myers were available. So this was funny. The Athletic dropped a report about Tim Connelly. Well, it was about the Detroit Pistons and their search for a new president of basketball operations. And man, poor Troy Weaver. I mean, he kind of had it coming. He's been really bad in Detroit. But poor Troy Weaver, it was leaked by the Pistons that whoever gets hired is allowed to fire Troy Weaver. And if I'm Troy Weaver, I'm like, what? All right. Glad everybody knows that. That's really cool. I guess it's possible that whoever they bring in could technically work with Troy Weaver, but you know, poor Troy is sitting there like, come on, man. Like, and you know, Troy isn't going to resign because then he would pass up on the severance that he has coming to him if and when the Detroit Pistons fire him. So he's not going anywhere unless they fire him. And they're making it known that they're willing to do that with whoever they hire as their president of basketball operations. And a name that was mentioned there, I found this super interesting, was Tim Connelly, who built the Denver Nuggets and then went to Minnesota. And at the year after he goes to Minnesota, the Nuggets go out and win a championship, but with a roster that was basically put together by Tim Connelly. Connelly goes to Minnesota and trades for Rudy Gobert. and does build out the rest of that roster, right? You bring in Jaden McDaniels, you bring in Nikhil Alexander Walker, you bring in Mike Conley, and so on and so forth. I believe he also drafted Anthony Edwards, which is a pretty good pick, I would imagine, right now. Since then he has put together, like, you know, it's really rare that an executive can basically say that the two teams that are playing each other in the second round of the playoffs or at any point in the playoffs, yeah, I built both of these things. If he apparently has an opt out in his contract that he intends to, opt out of and sign a new deal. And it just happens to get mentioned in this piece by it was Shams and somebody else. I'm forgetting who wrote it. I'll look that up while I talk. But reported in this. James Edwards is who helped Shams on this one. But Shams and Edwards wrote the following. Oh, come on. I'm subscribed. I guess I have to log in. But they wrote basically that he has an opt-out, and if he opts out, it is, you know, the Pistons believe that if they make an offer of $15-ish million, that they'd be able to entice Connolly away from Minnesota. Just like, you know, casually floating out the number that you're looking for from your current employer. Now, remember, with Minnesota, if you're Tim Connolly, you're not sure who's going to be signing your checks next year. So it actually makes a whole bunch of sense that Connolly would be leaking this and, you know, kind of going on the power play here, given the leverage that he has over that organization and given the flux that that organization currently finds itself in. So I totally understand where Connolly is coming from. But what that did allow Lakers fans to start kind of wondering about is, oh, well, the Lakers print money. They should be able to, like, it costs $15 million a year to go out and get Tim Connolly, the guy who built the Denver Nuggets and who built the Minnesota Timberwolves. Well, that seems nice. Like, a lot of people in my mentions, and by the way, it crossed my mind too. Now, it was a very fleeting thought because there is zero chance whatsoever the Lakers would do it. We haven't even heard a report, a squeak, a leak, a whisper, nary a mention of Rob Pelinka's seat being even kind of hot. Like, it's you know, it's a freshly overturned pillow. The temperature of the seat that Rob Pelinka currently is sitting on. And that obviously, you know, I understand that it would frustrate people. It frustrates me. Like, this guy is now on his, what, third head coaching search in about 4 or 5 years. The Lakers have been mostly mediocre with LeBron James and Anthony Davis in the regular season. You do have a couple of lengthy playoff runs to show for that relationship. One championship, which obviously matters too. Though I would argue that the team that they won that championship with was the team that Rob Pelinka had the fewest fingerprints on, and he immediately dismantled that championship roster and, you know, sent the Lakers into the, you know, the desert that Moses wandered around in, you know, ever since that Russell Westbrook trade that he played an active role in. And there is just no concern within the Lakers, apparently, about the job that Rob Pelinka is doing. And that obviously is pissing people off, especially when you have Bob Myers there working at ESPN, and especially when you have Tim Connolly potentially available this summer as well. And any number of potential candidates who would become available should the Lakers have an opening as their lead basketball decision maker. Remember the last time when Magic Johnson stepped down to tweet, there were a ton of executives who were, you know, in any range of along the spectrum of interested in the Lakers gig and willing to do some back channeling conversations to see what that would look like and to see what that availability could be. But instead, the Lakers, you know, chose to promote Rob Pelinka to vice president of basketball operations, and they also allowed him to keep his title of general manager. And, you know, obviously the rest is history. And I totally understand that Lakers fans would look at Tim Connelly and say, like, no, not even, you're not even going to like talk to him. It's not the Milwaukee Bucks are blocking John Horst from interviewing with the Detroit Pistons, which is within their right, as things stand right now. Normally, if you do that, you're probably going to pay that candidate or promote that candidate. So right now he's the GM, I believe, of the Milwaukee Bucks. And, he would be potentially interviewing for the vice president or president of basketball operations, which would technically be a promotion. So I would imagine the Bucks are probably going to promote him this upcoming summer. The Lakers are one decision away from having, a really exciting opening here where you either get to oversee the final couple of years of LeBron James's career, or you get to be the person who, kind of designs the next chapter of Lakers history. And the Lakers appear poised to, make sure that that person who gets to do both of those things is Rob Pelinka. And yeah, I totally understand why people are kind of frustrated by it. I frankly agree. So, here we are, I guess. Another comment here, this one from Justin Tyndall. So thank you. Justin Tyndall writing that Bronny was 6'1 without shoes and a 6'7 wingspan. That's pretty small. Now, apparently some of the measurements are kind of off right now. Stephon Castle measured way below what he actually looked like and played at, while he was in college. So some of the measurements are a little wonky, and I guess we'll have to keep an eye on that or whatever. But like, Bronny is not very big, and he doesn't have the smoothest jumper. He doesn't jump on his jumper. It's a set shot, which is normally a red flag for me, for my point guards. And, he's just, again, he's a second round prospect who in basically any other situation would not be draftable. Sagar Manon writing, thoughts about bringing in Kuz. He could fit in LA. Yeah. I mean, look, I've reported in the past, you go back to the trade deadline, the Lakers kind of kicked the tires on Kuz and they checked in on his availability. The Washington Wizards at that time were not interested in trading Kuzma. Now, they did trade away Daniel Gafford, which was pretty surprising to me. According to reports, they are hoping to bring in another first rounder into this upcoming draft, which doesn't exactly have a ton of star power, but is considered relatively deep. And the going price on Kuz was at least a first rounder, maybe even two first rounders. He is on a, relatively easy contract to deal with. I would imagine that the Lakers are going to put in a call with Washington to check in on his availability and see what that price is. I think he'd be a clear upgrade over Rui or any other wing that the Lakers have had basically since he went since they traded him to Washington. And I also, as I've said here a few times on the show, I also know that he is very open to returning to LA and being a Laker again. So, I love the idea of bringing back Kuz. I really liked him as a player, and I thought that the Lakers gave up on that formula of team building way too quickly and have kind of regretted it ever since. Not kind of, they have regretted it ever since. So yeah, I'm 100% in on Kuz. It just depends on the price. All right. Lakers GOAT. This is from yesterday. Going to try to get to as many of these questions as possible. A quick reminder The best way to get your topic covered on the show is a 5-star review on iTunes. They're free. The second best way is to leave a super comment here, because those are highlighted when they are left. But the best and cheapest way to get a comment on here is to leave a 5-star review on iTunes. You can search on iTunes for Lakers Lounge and show pops right up. I'm going to get to as many of these ones as I can in the next, 10 to 15 minutes or so. And starting with this one from Laker Goat, do you think the NBA should adopt the non-coast conference system like in the NFL, where they have the AFC and the NFC, or MLB, where they have the AL and the NL? The West is way overstocked, and would or should they do this? Should they? Absolutely. you need to figure out some way to close the gap between the East and the just poor basketball that we have seen for decades now, and the West, which is again next year going to be even more stacked. So that I think is should they is an easy one to answer. Yes, they absolutely should look into whatever resolution it takes or whatever solution it takes to, bridge that gap between the two conferences. Now, would they? Not happening. It's never happening. If you're an owner of an Eastern Conference team, your job is really, really easy, and your path to profitability is really, really easy. Be mediocre, duck the luxury tax, keep your payroll nice and low, and chances are you'll at least get a play-in game. And if you win enough of those play-in games, you get playoff revenue. And if you're an owner there and it gets presented, or this solution gets presented that would make your life harder, guess how you're going to vote? And there are just too many owners in the East who are just never going to vote for that. And it sucks. I wish that wasn't the case. But, again, should something be done? Absolutely. The West has been way too good for way too long, and the East has been way too bad for way too long. You would think at some point it would flip accidentally. When you're bad in the NBA, you get to draft at the top of the at the top of the draft. You would think that there are enough Eastern Conference teams that have been drafting high enough to figure this out at some point, and you'd get enough talent to bridge that gap between the East and the West. But nope, all of those organizations are owned by, bumbling idiots or people who are so cynical that they don't care about winning championships and way vastly prioritize, keeping the books clean, so that when that playoff revenue comes in, it's a nice little bonus versus something that you would invest back into your organization. And here we are. You have the West, where it takes a certain level of competency to make it into the playoffs and viably come out of the Western Conference. And then in the East, if the West is if that competence level, if that bar is sitting right here, the East is somewhere like, in the magma that is well below the crust of the earth. It's a problem that not enough, or I guess too many people are incentivized to, maintain the status quo to actually fix it. Seraphic Blade, Lady Greenheart asks, can we get Jonas Valanciunas? Who can we trade using the first round pick? I don't think it would take a first round pick to get Jonas. I think in general, the Pelicans are going to be doing some pretty drastic stuff. Mark Stein reported that it is considered an inevitability that Brandon Ingram gets traded this upcoming summer. For those of you who are curious, do the Lakers have enough to make that work, or would that fit? I think it'd be really clunky. Like the LeBron and Ingram thing just never really worked in the way that I wish it did. And I think he's formed some bad habits out there in New Orleans as kind of their primary ball handler. He's not the defender that he should be, frankly. and he never developed as a facilitator in the way that I would have hoped. And then obviously his shot, it's improved, don't get me wrong, but he's not a catch and shoot threat. And that is really limited the way that he and Zion can kind of operate together. But yeah, Valanciunas is interesting. I think he would, you know, fit that mold of player that I talked about in yesterday's show. Somebody who is better than Christian Wood, but obviously is going to be worse than Anthony Davis, and could potentially play next to AD. It's a little clunky because Valanciunas doesn't spread the floor all that well. Is a decent passer, right? He would really help. I would like him in, you know, as like an innings eater against Jokic. If that, you know, as that is a matchup that you always have to have at the forefront of your mind. But he's interesting, and you know, would it take a first rounder? I'd be pretty surprised if it costs a first rounder to get JV. I would probably say it would cost multiple seconds, and you know, you're probably giving up, you know, a you know, maybe a pick swap or something in there too. But I think he's a name that I'd be pretty happy about if they're able to bring him in. This is an interesting one. All right, so Lakers perp. Conley is averaging 11 points per game. Naz Reid is averaging 12 points per game. D'Lo averaged 14 points per game. AR averaged 17 points per game. Can you compare fan reaction to each? Well, one team is in the second round of the playoffs. The other team got sent home by the same team that swept them last year and were only able to win one game. You are now, if you increased your win total against that team by one every year, you're still 3 years from beating the Denver Nuggets in a playoff series, and we all know that it doesn't necessarily work that way. Points per game isn't the only thing that matters in basketball. Like the idea that because the, you know, D'Lo and Austin score more, that's all I care about. Conley is a significantly better defender. He takes way less off of the table and puts a decent amount on it. Naz Reid, the reigning sixth man of the year. You talk about bigs who would be absolutely perfect for the Lakers to bring in. Naz Reid is him. Like, that's the guy that if the Lakers basically, you know, committed all of their resources to bringing in a big, Naz would be the guy that I'd be interested in. He spreads the floor. He's big. He's physical. He's tough. He can actually move his feet okay too, and is already willing to come off of the bench. Like, he could play with AD. He could be just fine without AD. Now, you lose some of the vertical threat that you would have from other centers potentially, but, you know, like, there's a reason that he's gone from undrafted player to really, really, really important player. And, you know, whereas like D'Lo went from second overall pick or wherever he was drafted to now he's like a fringe. He's like a good starter, but he's not a starter on a team that's going to win you a championship. And, you know, that the fan reaction to each, it's, you know, fans are reacting to the fact that Lakers fans are reacting to the fact that their team is no longer playing. It's really kind of that simple. Did dinosaurs actually roam the earth, or did scientists just make that up with partial fossil fragments? I'm pretty sure dinosaurs roam the earth, and like, they have partial fossil fragments because that happened millions and millions and millions of years ago, and that's all that you have to show for it. But yeah, I tend to believe in dinosaurs, and I tend to believe in science, just generally speaking. Dinosaurs are also just really fun to think about. I was one of those nerds growing up. When I was like 10 years old, I had all of the dinosaurs memorized. And even still, like, if I'm watching a, I think one of my viral tweets from a few years back was, you know, a joke about the Jurassic Park and how dinosaurs that are featured in Jurassic Park were actually from the Cretaceous period. like, again, like those, you guys have no idea what kind of a nerd I am. And dinosaurs are just really, really fun to think about. NBA Insider GOAT apparently tweeted on May 12th that Lakers head coach news is coming tomorrow. And then somebody quote tweeted that to ask if I had heard about that. I guess if you want to say that the report from Woj and McMenamin counts as Lakers coaching news, okay. Like, but no, the Lakers are going to move really, really slow. They have moved really, really slow. And that's going to remain the case for a little while. Let's see. How many coaches say no before the Lakers offer Kurt Rambis a job? For one thing, no candidate that is currently on the market or could potentially get hired by the Lakers is going to say no to the Lakers. And that's just not going to happen. So right then and there, that question is a little tough. But the other thing too with Kurt Rambis specifically, because I get a lot of people asking about Kurt Rambis. Kurt Rambis has like one of the most cush jobs in the entire NBA. He's essentially, you know, his input gets taken into account, and he is somebody whose voice really, really matters in the Los Angeles Lakers organization. And there is zero risk whatsoever for him to get fired. It's never going to happen. Kurt Rambis will never be fired and will probably never be displaced in the Lakers organization so long as Genie is the owner. So the idea that he would go from that, take technically a demotion and go try to be the head coach of the Lakers and all of the pressure that comes with that, it's not happening. It just is never, ever, ever going to happen. And I don't think the Lakers would ever seriously consider it anyway. But he also would be crazy to take that gig. And I don't think he's a crazy person. I think he's smart enough to realize a good situation while he has it. And, you know, right now he's sticking around in the job that he has for the foreseeable future. All right. Last question here before I go. And, this is from at Logical Quan, writing, what are the odds that the Hawks do a hard or soft rebuild, and who do the Lakers have the best odds of getting between Trey and DeJounte? So I saw a lot of people jumping to the conclusion that because they got the top pick that the Hawks are immediately going to go into a full rebuild. Remember I talked earlier about owners in the East who strive for mediocrity? And there, because there isn't a transformative presence in this draft, I think there's a lot of good players based off of what I've read so far about this draft. It's a lot of good players, no great players, or there are a lot of very good players even, but certainly no great players that, you know, when you draft them are going to be great. There might be some players who turn out to be great, but nobody that, you know, when you draft them, you know, is going to be great. And because of that, I could see the Hawks trading that first overall pick and bringing in more help for Trae Young to, for the Hawks to be a more serious contender with Trae Young there. He fired Clutch, or he went away from Clutch, got, you know, hired CAA. So that kind of already made me think that he probably isn't going to be a Laker anyway. But now, look, what does that mean for DeJounte Murray? That's where it gets kind of interesting, because that fit between him and Trey was clunky last year. So maybe Murray becomes available. But again, the amount of assets that it would take to go out and get DeJounte Murray, I would just rather use those assets or those resources on a wing, on a two-way wing, on a big who can play with or without Anthony Davis. Like, I don't get the infatuation with point guards. I really, really don't. Like, you look at the point guards that are still available out there. All right, Kyrie if I'm thinking about all of the best point guards that are still playing right now, you got Shea, who in my mind should have been the MVP. So, all right. And then you have Kyrie. And then you have Mike Conley, who's more of a kind of floor general. And then you have Jamal Murray, who is capable of playing like a superstar, but he isn't the best player on his team. And then, you know, you have in Boston, you have Drew Holiday, who's a kind of Mike Conley type player. And you have Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell. Mitchell and Garland are probably going to be eliminated. Brunson and the Knicks look like they are going to be eliminated. One of Kyrie or Shea are going to be eliminated this round. And then it looks like Conley is probably going to be eliminated by the Denver Nuggets. Like, my point here is that, like, for all of the focus over the years on point guards, and there's been a lot, I would love to go back and chart the number of max level point guards who have gone out and won a championship as the best player on their team. And that's not to say that, you know, the Lakers would be looking to bring in a point guard who would be the best player on the team. The best player on next year's team is going to be Anthony Davis. But I don't understand why there is, like, honestly, the Lakers have gotten themselves in trouble. The reason that they are where they are right now, where you are trying to find a path back to title competition next year, despite having Anthony Davis and despite having LeBron James healthy for more of last season than they've ever been healthy together to this point. The reason that you are trying to find a way to still be competitive despite having those guys in your organization is because of this just perpetual search for a point guard. What are you doing? Like, you won a championship with Alex Caruso starting as point guard. You spent most of that year with, like, KCP or Avery Bradley starting as a point guard. Like, stop with the point guard nonsense. Stop it. Doesn't mean you can't find more creativity and you can't have more secondary fun. But you have that too. You have one of Austin or D'Lo, like, or both probably going into next season. I don't know. But, like, this idea that, like, the Lakers need, like, this focus, this perpetual and never-ending focus on point guards. It was Dennis Schroeder, and it was Russell Westbrook, and now it's DeJounte Murray, and it's Trae Young, and it's Donovan Mitchell, and it's just point guard after point guard after point guard. When everything in basketball right now is indicating the bigger that your team is, and the bigger that your creativity is on the floor at any given time, the higher a likelihood that you're going to have a championship caliber team, right? Like, you have the flash in the pans. You have the Sacramento Kings, right, who had De'Aaron Fox and Malik Monk, and they were super duper fun, and then they didn't matter. You have Darius Garland and Donovan Mitchell, and they're super duper fun, but in, like, a few days, they probably aren't going to matter either. It's just, why? I'm losing. I went full Joker again. I did it. You got me ranting, talking about point guards. No more point guard talk. Get me two-way wings. Get me guys who can play on both sides of the ball, and I don't have to worry about getting picked on in a playoff series. Those are the types of players that the Lakers need to focus on. Stop it with this unending and incessant search for a point guard when LeBron James is going to have the ball at the end of the game anyway. Man, I got heated. Woo. All right. Before I have a heart attack, that is going to do it here for this episode of the Lakers, the Lakers Lowdown. Again, as I mentioned earlier in the show, the plan right now is for Jovan Buha to be here in the lounge live tomorrow afternoon. That'll be a fun conversation. Always love catching up with him. I thought Harrison might be doing today's show. He is pushed instead to Wednesday's show. And then we have Aaron, and then we have heading into the weekend. So, you know, unless we get big breaking news or whatever like that, until tomorrow, please hit that subscribe button. Please hit that like button. It's insane to me that 900 people are in here watching. You guys are the best. I will never understand the amounts of support that we get here. I greatly, greatly appreciate it. But yeah, hit that subscribe button, hit that like button, comment, rate, review, tell your friends, tell your enemies, tell your neighbors, tell whoever. And until the next time you guys hear from me, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. Talk to you.